Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion for November 23rd and 24th, 2012, from sundown to sundown. This teaching is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com, themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoyed this teaching. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch Atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech HaOlam, we thank you, O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for your Torah and for the understanding that you're bringing out in the end of days. And I just ask that you be with my mouth as I speak. Abba, I ask that nothing that I say will be of me, but only of you. Abba, I just want to teach your word correctly and to not ever destroy it in any way. I just ask that you would be with your people all over the earth and that you would bless us and keep us in the coming days. Just be with us, Abba, I pray in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Last week, we saw that Jacob obtained the blessing from Isaac, and many people believe Jacob was being deceitful. I have said that I think we ought not to judge this situation so harshly, and now, because of studying ancient Near East covenants through Rico Cortez's teachings, I believe that my quote-unquote feeling about this is borne up. Under ancient Near East covenants, a father could appoint a different son to inherit over the oldest son. Both Rebekah and Jacob would have understood this, but so would have Isaac. And I believe that Isaac deliberately appointed, according to ancient Near East covenants, the custom of the time, Jacob over Esau. I believe that is what we're really seeing in that account from Toldot. But we're going to see that even Jacob suffers loss under this same ancient Near East covenant custom of the time. And let's not forget that Jacob will appoint a different son, or actually two different sons other than his firstborn Reuben, to inherit his kingdom. This Torah portion, Vayetze, is heavy with covenant language that we need to understand. There is a lot in this Torah portion, but there are some salient points that pertain to understanding Jacob, his marriages to Leah and Rachel, and how these relate to us at the end. I have done other teachings having to do with Jacob that have more information in them, so you can go back and listen to those. But also, I want to give credit to the studies that I've been doing through Rico Cortez's website that has helped me to understand ancient Near East covenants. We start this Torah portion seeing that Jacob is scattered or exiled just as we are. In fact, Jacob's story is our story. In exile is where Jacob deals with the Messiah. Now, what is the problem that Jacob is struggling over in the beginning of this Torah portion? Well, he was struggling over the promise of the inheritance of the land. He knew he was supposed to inherit the land, and he was struggling with whether or not he actually believed he would inherit the land. So Jehovah sent him a dream. And I'm going to read this out of the Scriptures 1998 version. Genesis 28:11 says, "And he came upon a place and stopped over for the night, for the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep." Now the stone that Jacob laid his head on is Messiah. This is an allusion to him trying to understand the stone, the rock of his and our salvation, with what? His head, or with our head. We have to understand our Messiah with both our head and our heart. Humans cannot comprehend the Lord with our human mind. And we cannot comprehend this understanding about our inheritance with our human mind either. In fact, we do not understand the Abrahamic covenant with our mind, that Abrahamic covenant which is the promise of our inheritance, and Jacob didn't understand it once he was exiled. Now, he might have thought he had a good grasp of it while he was still in Isaac's house. Mentally, he probably did. He probably understood the concept of inheritance, but now he's in exile and his head can't wrap around this issue. So now he needs this dream that Jehovah is going to send to him to help this get hit straight in his heart. So, how does Jacob finally get it in his heart? How is he finally able to believe in the promise that he will inherit the land enough to later be willing to come back to the land when the Lord says to come back, instead of staying with Laban and continuing to be abused? Well, it has to do with this ladder. In the dream that we call Jacob's ladder, Jacob sees messengers or angels ascending and descending. And there are a lot of interpretations, and I believe they all have valid points in this matter, because this symbol of the ladder with the angels or messengers on it is just that. It's a symbol. And symbols have depth of meaning that, we bring out just in our perspectives. And so people have perspectives on this ladder. Well, in this year's Torah portion, my perspective is that in the ancient Near East, this ladder was a symbol used by kings to indicate that they owned heaven and earth. Now, that would have been the meaning behind Nimrod with that Tower of Babel. That was going to be his quote-unquote ladder. And he was going to declare that he owned the heaven and the earth. But who is it, ultimately, that ascends and descends? Who ascends to the heavens and who descends from the heavens to the earth? Well, it is Yeshua. So, what does this ascending and descending ability mean? It means ownership of the earth. Now, we know Jacob understood this symbolism because of what he did after Jehovah spoke to him to reassure him. And this would not be the last time Jehovah spoke to Jacob in a dream to reassure him. Genesis 28:13, and again this is in Scripture's 1998 version. And see, Jehovah stood above it and said, I am Jehovah Elohim of Abraham your father, and the Elohim of Yitzchak. The land on which you are lying, I give it to you and your seed. And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall break forth to the west and to the east, to the north and the south, and all the clans of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your seed. For see, I am with you, and shall guard you wherever you go, and shall bring you back to this land. For I am not going to leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. And Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, truly Jehovah is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of Elohim, and this is the gate of the heavens. You see, Jehovah stood above the ladder, indicating his ownership of both the heaven and the earth, and Jacob understood that symbolism, and at that moment was when he believed in his heart what Jehovah told him. How do we know that he believed in his heart? Because he built an altar to Jehovah and promised tithes. Genesis 28:18-19. And Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a standing column, and poured oil on top of it. You see, that stone, that's the cornerstone. He understood this. And he called the name of that place Bethel. However, the name of that city had been Luz previously. So you see, we have to believe in the same way that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did, and we too have to follow up our belief with tithes, just as we know Abraham did and Jacob did, and we suspect that Isaac did, but nothing is written about that where Isaac is concerned. Jacob then continues on his journey and comes to Laban's house. Genesis 29:1. And Jacob moved on and came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and saw a well in the field, and saw three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and the large stone was on the well's mouth. And all the flocks would be gathered there. Then they would roll the stone from the well's mouth and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. So Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" And he said, "We are from Haran." And he said to them, "Do you know Laban, son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "Well, and see, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." And he said, "See, it is still high day, not the time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We are not allowed until all the flocks are gathered together, and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we shall water the sheep." While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now I'm going to stop right there for a minute, because I want you to see that we have four flocks of sheep. Now, we're also going to see that we have four families. We have Leah and her family, Bilhah and her family, Rachel and her family, and Zilpah and her family. And so that's four families. We have four flocks of sheep, but there's something else here. We see that we have shepherds here that don't want to water the sheep until they say it's time. But Jacob, as a representative of our Messiah, comes forward in the heat of the day. What is the heat of the day? It's the heat of battle. When is this battle going to be? During the Great Tribulation. He's going to come and water the sheep for us. Remember, in the wilderness, he's going to provide water for us. Not only water for our physical bodies, but water for us spiritually as well. And so those shepherds who want to stop him from watering the flocks are going to have a hard time doing so, because these flocks are now under the control of Jacob as being represented in the Messiah. He's going to see to it that they are well watered, both physically and spiritually. So now let's go down here to verse 10. And it came to be, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And when Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rachel's son, she ran and told her father. Now, can you imagine being Rachel and coming out with your flock of sheep, and some guy just comes running up to you and kisses you and then starts crying? Well, immediately thereafter, you would want an explanation. In verse 13, "And it came to be, when Laban heard the report, that Yaakov, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Then he told Laban all these matters. And Laban said to him, "You are indeed my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Now, one of the things we need to look at here is, why did Laban welcome Jacob so warmly? Well, if you will remember, Laban was around when Eliezer brought riches to Jacob's mother, Rebekah. Remember? Rebekah is Laban's sister. Scripture says that Jacob was in Laban's house for a month before Laban said anything about putting Jacob to work, since Jacob was not going to bring him riches like Eliezer did. You see, he might have been thinking that Jacob was withholding some kind of riches from him. I think probably it took him about a month to figure out that Jacob really was telling the truth. He was in exile, and he was not coming with the riches of Eliezer with him. And then in Genesis 29:15, it says, "Then Laban said to Jacob, 'Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Let me know what should be your wages.' And Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was lovely of form and appearance. And Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, 'Let me serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter.'" Now, it is often taught that Rachel's eyes being weak has to do with, because she is the mother of Judah, has to do with a prophecy about Judah's eyes being weak in seeing the Messiah. And so we just can leave that there. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. The reason, though, that Jacob had to work for Laban was because he had to pay the bride price or the dowry. And in marrying Rachel, Jacob would become Laban's adopted son, according to ancient Near East covenants. But this adoption also has to do with the land. Now, Jacob has just experienced coming through the land, going into exile, and the Lord meeting with him and promising him that the land whereon he had put his head, on that rock which Jacob set up as a cornerstone in the land, that land was going to be promised to him, right? But he now is in exile, and so he's going to marry into Laban's household, be adopted as Laban's son, and inherit that land. And I'm going to tell you in a minute why it would be that Jacob would inherit that land. But I'm wondering, and I don't know, this is just speculation, perhaps Jacob was a little bit confused about which land it would be that he would inherit, because he just told this land over here, but now he is over here in Laban's land. Or perhaps Jacob believed that the Lord would give him both, that he would inherit Laban's land and he would inherit the land that the Lord had given to him. That's just my speculation. But in ancient Near East covenant customs, land was not sold. It was inherited. Selling your family's land was a sign of breaking the family covenant. This is why Jehovah would later tell the children of Israel not to sell the land. They were in covenant with him for land ownership. The land is not theirs, it's his. They get to inherit it and use it. But as soon as they sell the land, they break the covenant and are no longer able to inherit the land. See? It is because of this land inheritance that Laban gave concubines from his own household to both Leah and Rachel. Genesis 29:20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are completed, and let me go into her." And Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. So now they're making a covenant. covenant, remember? And it came to be in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. And Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a female servant. In the ancient Near East covenants, the woman had a legal obligation to bear children. If she did not, then she was bound by law to provide an heir through a surrogate, what was called a concubine. The concubine's sole purpose in the household was to bear children for the barren wife. If you will remember, Leah did not use her concubine for that purpose until she ceased bearing. We read about this in Genesis 30, verse 9. And Leah saw that she had ceased bearing, and she took Zilpah, her female servant, and gave her to Jacob as wife. So Laban provided the concubines as insurance to make sure there would be a male heir to inherit his land. At this point, Leah is still the oldest and Rachel the secondborn, and there were no sons. Now later on, we're going to discover that there are sons, but these sons were most likely born after Jacob married Leah. So Leah is not just being nice, and we're going to see later on what the effect of those sons that were born after Jacob married Leah on Jacob. And verse 25, and in the morning it came to be that, see, it was Leah. So he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, it is not done this way in our place to give the younger before the firstborn. When we are in exile, we get caught up in the customs associated with whatever place we're forced to live in. Leah and Rachel were twins, just like Esau and Jacob. Some believe that Leah was intended for Esau and Rachel for Jacob. In fact, this may have been the reason that Laban did what he did, and it also may be behind the reason for Rebekah telling Jacob to go to Laban's house after receiving the blessing from Isaac. There may have been a pre-arranged marriage there. Remember how in Genesis 27:46, Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth, those daughters that Esau had married. What she was saying there is she's just tired of living. They were giving her such trouble, apparently. So this shows that there's a clue about a pre-arranged marriage intended for Esau, and that he actually broke that covenant arrangement. Therefore, in Laban's mind, it may have been that he was thinking it was up to Jacob to take upon himself the responsibility that was supposed to have been Esau's. And do you remember that as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, he kissed her? Doesn't that seem a little odd? Like I said before, wasn't he just a little bit too familiar? Remember that the man at the well told Jacob it was Rachel coming with the sheep. Well, if there was a prearranged marriage between Jacob and Rachel, then Jacob and Rachel would both have known about it, and when they met for the first time, and he swept her off her feet, and she was so lovely and all, this would have not been so out of the ordinary, would it? We know in the ancient Middle East that men did not just go around kissing women, even women that they were related to, that there was a pre-arranged marriage between Jacob and Rachel then would make sense of this situation. But then imagine Jacob's horror when he had just gotten married, and in the morning he wakes up and figures out that he's just consummated marriage with Leah. So This is why this evil trick of Laban was so awful. Laban not only broke his word to Jacob, but he broke his covenant, his pre-arranged marriage covenant, if there was one, that he made with Isaac and Rebekah. Breaking covenants in the ancient Near East was a huge issue, and it could mean death. But there could be more to why Laban did this. Laban needed Jacob to stay with him and keep enriching him. We know that Laban was enriched when Jacob was with him. And so even though ancient Near East covenants say the daughter and children were to stay behind if Jacob were to leave, Laban likely thought that Jacob would at some point just get up and leave and take Rachel and Leah and all the children, which would include the heirs that might go with them. Laban probably thought that, you know, Jacob was as deceitful as he was, because that's what people project themselves onto other people. You know, liars are attracted to other liars, and they will project their lying onto others, for instance. So, in order to get another 7 years of enrichment out of Jacob, Laban used the customary excuse that the oldest daughter had to be married first. This forced Jacob into another 7 years of forced servitude. In the ancient Near East custom of the time, a married man also was not permitted to have more than one wife. Contrary to what polygamists today would have us believe, in actuality, the ancient Near East covenant said that divorced men and polygamists forfeited everything that they would have inherited through that man's adoption by marriage. Yet, Jacob loved Rachel so much that he was willing to give up everything, number one, and Laban had no ground to stand on anyway because of his own breaking of the covenant, so he just had to look the other way. Because of the exceptional circumstances here, I believe this is all prophetic throughout history moving forward from Jacob, as the story of the descendants and all of this stuff is still prophetic for us down here at the end. Later on, we will find that Jacob had to ask permission and negotiate his way out of Laban's grip in order not to lose his whole family. In fact, let's go over there and look at this in Genesis chapter 30, starting at verse 25. And it came to be when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way to go to my own place and to my land." Now, we see here that Jacob is taking ownership of his inheritance. He's going to go back to his land, the land of his inheritance. "Give my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you." And Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay, for I have diligently watched that Jehovah has blessed me for your sake." And he said, "Name me your wages, and I give it." So he said to him, "You know how I have served you, and how your livestock has been with me. For the little you had before I came has increased greatly, and Jehovah has blessed you since my coming. Now, when am I to provide for my own house too?" And he said, "What do I give you?" And Jacob said, "Give me nothing. If you do this for me, I shall again feed you and guard your flocks." So Jacob is arguing for his freedom, not further wages. And he says, "Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep and all the black ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages." Now, these were to be his final wages. There were no more wives to be had, but now Jacob wanted his own flock. to two men in the ancient Near East, this meant that Jacob wanted to establish his own household and no longer be part of Laban's household. That's exactly what it says up here in verse 25. And for Jacob, this meant that he would go out with no hold on inheriting Laban's land. This is because Laban now had sons who superseded Leah and Rachel's right to the inheritance. So Jacob had nothing to lose except his wives and children if he did not negotiate well with Laban. This is because ancient Near East covenants actually say that he was supposed to leave without his wife and children. Jacob, showing that he intended to set up his own household, has been giving this clear sign to Laban that he intended to get out from under Laban. This is why Jacob had to negotiate his way out, because he did not want to leave without his wives and children. And even when he left and took his wife and children, Laban came after him to reinforce the idea that Jacob had broken their already shattered covenant that was broken when Leah was discovered in Jacob's bed instead of Rachel. In truth, the adoption of Jacob into Laban's household was broken at that point. Jacob only stayed in order to obtain Rachel. Just like Jacob and the children of Israel who came out of Egypt, we will plunder the land that we are exiled in, by bringing out our wives and children and the other things that we have gained while we were in that land. Genesis 31:1. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, see here we is the first time that we hear of Laban's sons. Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's has he gotten all the glory. So you see, Laban's sons are stirring up trouble against Jacob. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Jacob has known for a while now that Laban's young sons would inherit Laban's land. But apparently the sons believed that if Laban allowed Jacob to leave, that their inheritance would dwindle, and they were right. Laban had no skill in raising a flock. Jacob had the skill in raising a flock, and so the brothers would not have a whole lot to inherit after Jacob was gone. And even Leah and Rachel realized their position now of not being able to inherit Laban's property because there were younger brothers. And, of course, this also means that none of Rachel and Leah's children will inherit the land because Laban has sons of his own now. In Genesis 31:14, it says, and Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, they're talking to Jacob, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he has sold us and has quite devoured also our money. At some point, we're going to realize that Laban's Christian house has nothing for us. As a matter of fact, it is out of this thought that there's nothing in Laban's Christian house for us that has been the driving force behind the Hebrew Roots community. People coming out saying, surely our fathers have inherited lies. So Jacob, getting back to the story, Jacob negotiated his way out of Laban's house by asking permission from Laban and bantering with him over the sheep. And again, Jacob negotiated in order for Laban to not have a foot to stand on after Jacob left. Genesis 30:25, and it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away, that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done to you. Now you see, all of Jacob's children except one, Benjamin, were born in exile. I find that very interesting, and I think we might need to do a larger study on that. It's just very interesting that all out of the 12 children, 11 of them were born in exile. But let's talk about Jacob and his flock now. You know, I did a teaching on Jacob's spotted and speckled sheep, and I just want to add a few salient points to that. Jacob used techniques from modern science to achieve his breeding success. But Jacob's success was not just about a scientific approach, but it was testimony to Jacob's wisdom about animal husbandry, and in particular having to do with the plants that he used to get that success. If all Jacob wanted was to have an outcome of colored, spotted, and speckled sheep, he could have used any plants. He could have striped any tree branches the way he striped those particular plants that are mentioned in the book of Genesis, but he used specific plants for their medicinal qualities to not only get a colored herd, but to get it fast and healthy. All of the medicinal qualities in those plants mentioned in the scripture have to do with urinary and reproductive health. Science says you can take a sheep and use an external technique to cause a change in appearance, and that is what Jacob did. He was a man way ahead of his time. But what you get is still a sheep. A sheep is a sheep is a sheep. All that has happened is a change in how that sheep appears in the world. Now, the white sheep are those that we laughingly call sheeple. They engage in what my son calls mass behavior. For instance, Thanksgiving is a mass behavior holiday. So is Christmas, Easter, and all those other holidays that those who govern people want the sheeple to engage in. But there are those sheep that are different. They're colored, spotted, and speckled. They look different, and according to my research into Jacob's sheep, which is what that specific breed is called, these sheep even act different than the white sheep. This is significant because this is the flock that Jacob won his freedom from Laban with through his superior knowledge, and this flock is the one that he goes back to the land with. They're the ones that are different than the Laban's Christian house sheep, you see? This new flock represents those who, in the time of the end, are sheep, but they don't do what the sheeple, the all-white sheep, do. Furthermore, Jacob goes back to the land with more of what belonged to Esau. Yes, he's taking something back to the land that may have been something that was going to belong to Esau. He's going back with Leah, the wife that may have been intended for Esau. And don't think for one minute that Esau was not aware of this. Esau would have regarded the children from Leah as those that he might have had with her for himself. But first, let's go back to more explanation about us here at the end. Because now Jacob has left, and Laban is in hot pursuit. Genesis 31:26. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done? What have you stolen away, unaware to me, and carried away my daughters as captives, taken with the sword?" Oh, is this not said of us in the Hebrew Roots community, that we are captives to the Torah? And in verse 30 it says, "And now you would be gone, and because you are sore longing after your father's house, yet you have stolen my gods." Wait a minute. Here in the Hebrew Roots community, do we not still have baggage from the false deities worshipped at the unauthorized altars in Christian churches? But there is more to this than just bringing doctrinal baggage with us when we leave Laban's Christian house. In the ancient Near East custom, the house deities belonged to the one who would inherit that property. Leah and Rachel were not going to inherit it, as we have already seen. Instead, one of those brothers would inherit it. Rachel absconding with the house deity meant that she was declaring herself to still be the inheritor of Laban's Christian house. Do you see the spiritual significance of this? If we bring out of Laban's Christian Babylonian system the stuff that is in that system, we are declaring that we are still liable to inherit that. Coming out of Babylon means we have to leave all that stuff behind. We have to be very careful not to mix anything of that Babylonian doctrine into the doctrine of Jacob's flock that comes from the Torah. Genesis 31:31. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said that you would take by force your daughters from me. With whomsoever you find your gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern what is yours with me, and take it with you." For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. You know, Rachel was going to die in childbirth over this. I believe that she was already pregnant with Benjamin, as many do, when this episode was going on. So this is significant. Jacob pronounced death on the one he loved without even knowing it. You see, we believe that Rachel crying for her children is the same symbolic woman as that one who gives birth to the man-child in the book of Revelation. We don't know the fate of that woman in the book of Revelation. We know the man-child is born and that Satan goes after the remnant of her seed. But nothing is mentioned about whether the woman lives or dies. So, does this mean her fate is up in the air? Or does it mean that she lives? Or does it mean that she dies? I think the answer to that depends upon us leaving the house deities of Laban's Christian house in Laban's Christian house. And I also believe this is why Jehovah says he will meet us face to face in the wilderness to purge the rebels from our midst. Who is he going to purge? Those who have brought Laban's house deities from Laban's Christian Babylonian church. So I believe the woman lives this time. Rachel will live this time. But only because those who will be caught with deities will either be purged or they will confess and be forgiven. You see, Rachel lied to Laban in order to keep those house deities. And in this instance, Laban is a foreshadow of Jehovah coming to meet up with us who are now going to be fleeing Babylon, perhaps very soon. But this time, we will not be able to hide. You know, Rachel could hide her heart from her human father, Laban. But our father is not one that we can hide our heart from. There will be no use in lying. Yet, there will be those who will go ahead and lie. They will refuse to give back Laban's house deities. They will refuse to stop their idolatry, to stop mixing the pagan, the profane, in with the things of the living God that we find in the Torah. And Jehovah will purge them out, thus causing the woman to live. Genesis 31:33. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tent, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent, and entered into Rachel's tent. And now Rachel had taken the images, and put them in the camel's furniture, and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before you, for the custom of women is upon me." And he searched, but found not the images. And Jacob was wroth, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin, that you so hotly pursued after me? Whereas you have searched all my stuff, what have you found of all my household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. This 20 years have I been with you. My ewes and your she-goats have not cast their young, your ewes and your she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of your flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not to you. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand did you require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes." See, Jacob is recounting back to Laban the abuses that he has taken at the hands of Laban. So now Jacob is free to go back to the land. He's free of Laban. Now Rachel still has the idols, the household idol, with her, but they're going back to the land, and she dies in the land, and that idol, it does not have a place in the land. But now I want to go on to Genesis 32:1, and it says, "And Jacob went his way, and the angels or messengers of Elohim met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, 'This is the camp of Elohim.' And he called the place, the name of that place, Mahanaim." Well, you know, we don't often hear about these particular messengers or angels that met Jacob on the way back, but I believe they are significant. Not much is said about them, so probably just what we need to take away from them, from this, are two things. First, those messengers, those angels, know we are coming. And second, they are there for our protection when we get into the land. Why were they there to greet Jacob? Well, I believe they were there to greet him because it was a confirmation that he had heard the Lord correctly when in Genesis 31:3 we read, "And the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you.'" So the angels met him there in order to confirm that he had heard and that the Lord was with him. Now the book of Jasher says that Jehovah killed Laban for breaking that covenant. Jasher 36:7 says, "And Laban the Syrian died in those days, for God smote him because he transgressed the covenant that existed between him and Jacob." In the end, we will get confirmation that we're supposed to be in the land when we get there, and we will find that our enemies who have broken the covenant with us will be punished for doing so. Well, I hope that this Torah portion, which is coming to you somewhat late because of computer problems and other difficulties, has been a blessing to you, and I hope that you had a Shabbat Shalom.